They stopped going to parties. They discarded all their skinny jeans. They bought long skirts. They started wearing not only headscarves, but also, you know, more covering. They're starting to become very observant. So in the beginning, especially the mother was very pleased. But then very few people just wake up one day thinking, oh, I'll go to Syria. Oh, I'll join ISIS. It's usually it's a long process. And that was interesting to see how that was even possible.
There's this one moment where, you know, it's near the end of the process of becoming these ISIS recruits. Sarah, the mother, discovers that something has happened to the family photo album and the daughters are responsible for it. Explain that.
What they did was that they, in the family album and all pictures laying around, they cut themselves out of the pictures. They let the rest of the people, the family, be there. So there were no more pictures of the girls.
Do the girls think of themselves as feminists? Is this some kind of expression of liberation for them?
I'm sure they don't use that word now, but they did use it when they were early teens. They were quite inspired by feminism. And they even said that dressing in the full niqab, which is the full coverage, they saw that as a feminist act because it was their right to dress up. Because saying that, oh, in the West, women have to undress to get a job and so on, it's our right to dress up. And also when they were fighting for their rights as young extremist Muslims, they were using all the tools we have in the democracy. They were starting petitions. They would go to the headmaster. They would write letters to the municipality, to the county, to the state. So these were really tough girls. And the headmaster, who was a woman, she said she was actually quite impressed. That's before she knew how extreme they turned out, but she was quite expressed how these girls, they did everything she wanted her students to do, you know, if they didn't like the rules, protest. So somehow these two girls, they were standing with their feet well into the, you know, the feminist idea of how a woman should behave in Norway, but they were asking to be stripped of these rights that women have fought for a century or two. So it's a very confused ideal, I would say, that they were longing towards.
So the discovery of the photo album was pretty shocking for the parents, but the big shock comes one evening when their teenage daughters, they don't come home for dinner, and Sadiq and his wife Sarah get this email from Layla and Ayan, and it's like they've been hit over the head. Can you read that email for us, please?
Sure. Please do not be cross with us. It was so hard for us to leave without saying goodbye in the way you both deserve. We love you both so much and hope you will not break off ties with us. We have already asked too much of you, but we have to ask a favor. For both our safety and yours, no one outside the family can know we have left. Ayan and Layla.
And then Sadiq, the father, holds his face in his hands. And as a parent, I don't even know where to begin to try and understand what he and Sarah are going through. Sadiq, the father, does make this long, difficult journey to find his daughters. He goes to Turkey and hears that they cross the border into Syria. Can you just briefly describe the kind of risks he takes and, frankly, traumas that he endures to track down his daughters?
Yeah, Sadiq is a very special character. And there are hundreds of young teenagers and young jihadis leaving Norway to Syria. He's the only father who goes after them. So what he does is quite seldom. So he crosses the border into Syria, and after a few weeks, he actually finds and pins down where the girls are. He's able to set up a meeting with them.
Take us to that moment, if you would. I mean, he's standing in front of Ayan. The little sister has been hit by a bullet, and she's been tended to by a physician. And they're in the middle of this wreckage of war. What do Ayan and her dad say to each other?
So the father goes up to her, he tries to hug her and hold her in his arms and tell her, Ayan, finally you can come home with daddy, mommy's waiting, the nightmare is over, you can come home. And she just stands there and says, I'm not going home, I'm married now. And then in the end, she's now the property of another man.
An ISIS fighter.
Of an ISIS fighter.
Yeah.
Yes, incredible. Definitely. And he tries to kind of cling on to her, and then ISIS fighters are coming to rip the two of them apart. So they arrest him, they torture him, they beat him up. So they put him in prison where he stays for about 2 weeks. But finally he's released, but he's never seeing his daughters again, ever. That's now, This was 2013, so it's already like in the fifth year that this family is keeping contact with their daughters through chat logs, through Messenger, through phones, but now they haven't heard from them since last year, actually.
And remind us what year the girls fled Norway.
Yeah, so they left October 2013, and that was still when ISIS was still rising.
Right.
So the top of ISIS was 2014, 2015, when the caliphate was as big as Britain, 12 million people living there. They were wealthy. These girls coming from the West with money, they became part of the ISIS elite of Raqqa, moving into the houses of, fled other Syrians, or Christians or Shias or Yazidi. And they were sending messages back to the parents about, the great houses they had, a villa, a garden, they had pets, everything they got for free. And they even asked the parents to come down and live with them.
I got to say, it is a totally riveting story. What can you tell us, Asna, about where these two young women are today?
Wow, that is an impossible question, because I don't know. The parents don't know. They don't even know if they're still alive. The last time they heard from them was in November, and that wasn't from them directly, but it was through some other girlfriends who were down there too, who had called their parents. Mm. But there's a few parts of Syria that are still kept by ISIS. So there's a few stretches of land on the border between Syria and Iraq. They might be there. They might be in refugee camps in Iraq, but these are run by the Iraqi state, where you even have some of these young women on death row. So this is not a place where you'd be cuddled if you have been with ISIS. So if they're in the area, if they're still alive, they might face a very grim future.
Asna Seierstadt is the author of Two Sisters, A Father, His Daughters, and Their Journey into the Syrian Jihad. Thank you very much for telling us about them.
Thank you for having me on your show.